Welcome back to the Kaiser Report. It's time to go to Jerusalem to talk with economist Cher Heber of the Alternative Information Center. Cher, welcome to the Kaiser Report.
Thank you for having me. I like your show very much.
Okay, thanks. Cher Heber, you're part of the Boycott Divestment Sanctions Movement against Israel, the BDS movement. Tell us more about it. Why is it necessary, in your opinion?
Well, BDS is a call by Palestinians, first and foremost, which has been joined by supporters from around the world and also from Israel, such as myself. But it's first and foremost a Palestinian call, and calling on international solidarity for people to support the Palestinian struggle for freedom against Israeli repression, and to do so by putting economic pressure on Israel, rather than by using force of arms and military means to try to force the Israeli government to recognize its obligations under international law and respect the rights of Palestinians.
Is the boycott having any impact?
First of all, we have to consider that it is a very new, a young movement. The call by the Palestinian civil society organizations is from 2005. There were very sporadic attempts at boycott before that. So from 2005, the call has grown very rapidly. And unfortunately, the main thing that causes the call to grow and the support for BDS to grow in the world is every time that Israel attacks the Palestinians, attacks Gaza, kills innocent civilians, then people are outraged and they express their outrage by supporting boycott. There's been a lot of international companies that were already affected by the boycott in the sense that they faced a lot of pressure in other countries around the world to stop providing Israel with the tools that Israel needs to oppress the Palestinians and continue to occupy the Palestinian territories. I can give you hundreds of examples, but if I can give just one good example, I would say that Veolia, which is a large French company that provides tramways and public transportation all around the world, has signed a deal with Israel to provide a tramway in East Jerusalem, occupied East Jerusalem. And since this area is illegally occupied by Israel, illegally annexed, Veolia is actually doing something illegal by providing Israel with this service. Now, because of all the pressure by the international community on Veolia to stop dealing with Israel, they've lost several contracts around the world, and the most important of which is the building of the tramway in Stockholm. And that was a project worth 3 billion euros. So after Veolia lost such a huge contract, they've decided actually they want to sell their stocks in Israel, and they want to pull out of the project. But right now, nobody's willing to buy their stocks for the tramway in Jerusalem, putting them in a very difficult position. I think the result of companies like Veolia getting into this difficult position where they commit an illegal act, then they face international boycott, is that other companies would think twice and maybe thrice before getting into an involvement with the Israeli government.
Now, when I first heard about the boycott, it reminded me of the boycott that was put on Barclays Bank during the apartheid regime in South Africa. And of course, that word apartheid has been used by former U.S. President Jimmy Carter to describe what's going on with Israel and Palestine. Are there some similarities between the boycott and apartheid movement of South Africa and the eventual resolution that came to bear there, and what's happening over there between Israel and Palestine right now? Because if you use that as an example, that international boycott did tip the balance in favor of the freedom movement.
Well, of course, there are many similarities. There are also differences. Perhaps the most striking difference is that in apartheid South Africa, the white population actually had a role within the economy for the black population of South Africa as their workforce, and they wanted to exploit the black workers. While in Israel, Palestine, the Israeli government is trying to avoid exploiting the Palestinian workers, but rather to get them to leave altogether, to get them completely out of the region. So that's a difference. But in other respects, apartheid is very similar. First of all, you have a population of 11 million people in Israel-Palestine together. Now, in that population, Jews are 49% of the population. So they're now a minority for the first time in many years. Jews are a minority in Palestine, and yet they have 78% of the votes for parliament, which means that the Zionist parties, represented mostly the Jewish population in Palestine, have an automatic majority. They always control the government. So in that sense, you have a large disenfranchised group. You also have rules that state that certain roads are for use by Jews only and certain roads are not, that Palestinians are not allowed without a permit in certain areas while Jews are allowed. And that creates, of course, a system of separation. Separation in Afrikaans, the language of South Africa, of the white people in South Africa, means apartheid. Apartheid means separation. So the boycott of South Africa is not just the boycott of the Barclays Bank. It was a very widespread boycott supported also by governments, and it put a lot of pressure on the white population of South Africa to do away with apartheid. But actually, many historians today are very skeptical about how much boycott was effective in the case of South Africa, because they're saying that South Africa is a country rich with natural resources. They had many ways to find substitutes for what they couldn't import, couldn't export, and they found ways to withstand boycott for a very long period of time. Boycott started in the 50s, and apartheid only collapsed in 94. But in Israel-Palestine, the situation is very different, because here, Israel is one of the most globalized economies in the world, compared to its size, of course. It's the 10th biggest per capita importer in the world and the 8th biggest per capita exporter in the world. And that means that Israel is very sensitive to any kind of international boycott. We cannot hope, in the short run at least, to have a very widespread boycott like there was in South Africa. But even a fraction of that boycott would be enough to put a stop to the Israeli economy, in the sense that the Israeli government would simply have no choice but to start complying with international law. Also, Israel is not very rich in natural resources like South Africa is, and Israel is very much dependent on aid from other countries, on its good relations with Europe as its biggest trading partner, with the United States as the biggest provider of aid to Israel.
Let me ask you right there. Can you talk a little bit about the U.S. role in sustaining this apartheid model?
Without taking any of the responsibility of the Israeli government to the war crimes, to the atrocities committed, unfortunately, on a regular basis in Palestine, there is also a very large role to be played here by the American government, by the U.S. government. First of all, the United States rewarded Israel for the occupation of 1967 by starting to increase aid to Israel, especially military aid. And Israel gives, the U.S. gives Israel $3 billion every year in military aid. Now, the U.S. also tries to present itself as the kind of arbiter between Israel and the Palestinians in the peace negotiations. But in fact, what kind of arbiter gives weapons to the aggressor in a dispute? Obviously, they're not objective. They are supporting Israel, and they are promoting conflict in the Middle East. They're giving Israel a political umbrella, which protects Israel from criticism when Israel invades Lebanon, for example, or more recently when Israel invaded Gaza.
Let me ask you now, you mentioned this $3 billion or so dollars of U.S. aid per year. And according to international law, from what I understand, of course, it's illegal to give aid to any country with a nuclear program. So since Israel does have a big nuclear program, with some estimates suggesting up to 200 nuclear warheads, that right there makes it an illegal act for the U.S. to give them any money at all in so-called aid. And as a U.S. taxpayer myself, I've tried to lobby the Israeli government to give me back the many billions of dollars that we've given them, filtered through my own experience with the economy in the U.S. I figured that Benjamin Netanyahu probably owes me about $3,000 personally. I'm not holding my breath that he'll pay me my money back anytime soon, although I think morally and ethically he should. Yeah.